So we are holding on Koflamid Vav Omud Beis by the two dots, about two-thirds of the way down the Omud.
Okay.
Mishnah's a bit line begins Chomer. Mishnah said, Chomer b'zroya v'cholo, the Mishnah said that there are certain chomeres in Matonis, Zroya v'chayayim v'keva, over Reishas HaGeiz, and vice versa. Namely, we said that, among other things, we said, so we said in the Mishnah, okay, so we said that there's chomeres in Zroya l'chayayim v'keva over Reishas HaGeiz and vice versa, because Zroya l'chayayim v'keva applies to all domestic animals, whereas Reishas HaGeiz is only sheep. Also, Zroya l'chayayim v'keva is, even if you're shechting only one animal, Reishas HaGeiz is only if you have a bunch of sheep. The Gemara says, well, listen, now why didn't the Mishnah mention another chomer in Zroya l'chayayim v'keva, in Reishas HaGeiz? Why didn't the Mishnah mention, on the other hand, there's a chomer in Reishas HaGeiz? Chomer b'Reishas HaGeiz shenoyig b'tshrei pas mashenk in Matanis. We should say there's a chomer in Reishas HaGeiz that it applies even if the animal that you're shearing the wool from is a trefa, which would not be the case with Matanis. Now, what would be the reason to say it doesn't apply to Matanis? Rashi says, because the kohen wouldn't be able to eat it. And we would say, when the pasuk says titen loy, that you have to give the when you that v'nosam l'koyin, rather azroy l'chayayim v'keva, the implication is you have to give it in such a way that the koyin can eat it, not like that where the only thing you can do is feed it to dogs. That's the question. Shouldn't the Mishnah mention that Reishas HaGeiz does apply to a trefa? And the answer is Homani Rav Shimon.
It does apply to a trefa.
On the face of it, why should we say no? The answer is Omer Ravina. So Ravina says no, Homani Rav Shimon. As a matter of fact, our Mishnah is according to Rav Shimon. And Rav Shimon holds that a trefa is potter from Reishas HaGeiz. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rav Shimon potter as a trefa from Reishas HaGeiz. Rav Shimon says that a trefa animal is potter from Reishas HaGeiz. Same as it would be potter from... So the Chum disagree, fine, but our Mishnah is according to Rav Shimon, therefore the Mishnah doesn't mention that Reishas HaGeiz applies in a case with where Matanis don't, because in fact, according to Rav Shimon, neither one does. My time with Rav Shimon. Now, okay, why does Rav Shimon say that a trefa animal is potter from Reishas HaGeiz? Yalif Nesinim, Nesinim, Matanis, because he learns by Gzeira Shava from the word Nesina that applies to Matanis. But Matanis is the Nosan Lakoy, and he was Reishas HaGeiz and Kotitin Loy. So both of them have to be the same kind of giving. Ma matonis trefa loy, just like by matonis, you don't give from a trefa animal because you would be giving you'd be giving it only in effect that he could feed it to his dog. So ma matonis trefa loy, Reishas HaGeiz trefa, nami trefa loy. So the same thing he says, Reishas HaGeiz also would not apply to a trefa. So that's where the criminal gets it from. Because by both of them it says the shorosh not on that you should give them to the kohen. And since by matonis it's obvious, that you don't give the animal a trefa, because then you would be chicken loyal of a cowboy, you'd be giving a same only to feed to a dog. Therefore, Shimon says by Xerah Shah, the same thing would apply to Reishas HaGeiz.
From the
word Noftan, or from the word, from the Shodosh Noftan. Okay, so the question is, the Iyalif Nesinah Nesinah Matonis, well, Rav Shimon is going to be learning by Xerah Shah based on the word Nesinah from Matonis, from Zerah L'Chayayim V'Teva. Leilof Nesinah Nesinah Mitzruma. Why instead would he not learn the other end of the Xerah Shah from Mitzruma? And say ma truma ba'aretz ein b'chutz la'aretz loy, as we said before about Rabbi Loy's opinion, that he would say just like truma applies only in Eretz Yisrael, right? Anyway, only in Eretz Yisrael, not in chutz la'aretz. After Reishas HaGeiz nami be'eretz Yisrael ein b'chutz la'aretz loy, ba'aretz ein b'chutz la'aretz loy. So Reishas HaGeiz should be the same thing. Alam atznan Reishas HaGeiz noig ba'aretz b'chutz la'aretz. Now we said before our mission is not like Rabbi Loy. Fine. Apparently we're saying our mission is like Rabbi Shimon. If Rabbi Shimon is, why would Rabbi Shimon learn Reishas HaGeiz from Matanis?
In questioning the consistency of Rav Shimon.
We're saying, why would Rav Shimon, instead of learning from Matanis, and therefore say that it doesn't apply to a trefa, why instead wouldn't he learn it from Truma and say that it applies only in Eretz Yisrael? So that doesn't work. So we can't say that's the reason for Rav Shimon's opinion about Reishas HaGeiz.
Truma is not a Matanis, by the way.
It is. It's one of the 24 Matanis Kohanim. And by it is. It's one of the 24 Matanis that you have to give a kohen. And therefore, the Pasuk uses by also the expression titan loy. Yes, exactly. Okay, so that doesn't work. Ella Heiner time of the Rav Shimon. Rather, no. We have to say the reason for Rav Shimon's reason is Yalak Soin Soin Mimaisa. He is learning a Xeder Shava, but a different one. He's learning a Xeder Shava based on the word Soin from Meister Behema. Whereby over here it says Vereshis Gate Soin Kotsu Soin. By Meister Behema, it says Masa Bako Vot Soin. So therefore, he's learning a Gzeirah Shava from Meister, and therefore, Ma Meister Tshepaloi. Now, by Meister Behema, one of the types of animals that you do not put into the pen to count for Meister is you don't put in a Tshepa animal. Operations I gave Tshepaloi, and therefore, it's possible for Meister Behema. Operations I gave Tshepaloi. The same thing Rish I gave, it does not apply to a Tshepa either. So the question is, okay, so where would Rav Shimon get that when it comes to Maisa Behema, you don't include the Trefus? Just give, because the Pasuk says, Kol Asher Yaver Tachas HaShovet. The Pasuk says, what do you give Maisa Behema? You give any animal that can pass under the stick. So that's how you do. We'll learn at the end of Bechorus, that's the sham in a couple of months, that you have the animals walk out of the pen one at a time, and then every 10th one, you strike it with a stick marked with red paint, so that you have a smear or a stripe of red paint on the animal, and that way you can recognize it afterwards, and that one is my stick. And then
you're not allowed to burn them, right?
Huh?
Like we do.
Oh, you mean to brand them?
Yeah, with a
branding on them? Maybe you could, I don't know, but this is the way that maybe you could, I don't know that one. Maybe that would make it a move, maybe it wouldn't, I don't know, but anyway, that's maybe, I don't know, maybe, it's possible, I don't know, but anyway, be that as it may, the way the Mishnah describes it is soikra v'sikra, you mark it with a stick with the dipped in red paint. Anyway, the point is, though, the Pasuk says anything that can pass under the stick, implying krap l'treifa she'en oiver, as opposed to a treifa animal is not able to pass through. Now, what does that mean? Usually a treifa animal is able to walk around. But Rashi explains, we learned earlier in our Masechta, one type of trefa is where the animal's leg has been cut off above the ankle joint, above the first segment, above the lowest segment of the leg. Then we said the animal is a trefa. An animal with that condition is not able to walk, is not able to pass under the stick. And Rashi says, so therefore we use that as a binyan av to learn, we're learning all the other trefas from that. Once we see that the Torah is exempting one kind of trefa, where the leg is cut off above the knee, then it would apply to other ones also. Okay, Tosis brings up a point. And so what? I mean, and if the lower segment of the leg is cut, the animal can't walk either. That doesn't make it a trefa, though. So Tosis leaves it as a question. But even the lower segment physically can't walk. So Tosis... So Tosis says, okay, maybe actually the Gemara here is implying that an animal whose leg is cut off, even in the lower segment, would be closer from Maisa Behema, because it can't walk. However, Tosfos is a doichas. It's a hard thing to say that. You don't really find anything clear in the Gemara that says that. So you have a couple of different explanations. One of them being that Tosfos also discusses this in Bechorus and Sugya about this in the last parak. Tosfos Rosh discusses it. When the lower segment is missing, it's just a malmum. The bali mumim we know you do take Maisa Behema from. So the Tosfos Rosh talks about and Tosfos in Bechorus over there sort of says something similar, that since we see, if the Pasuk is trying to tell us that there's a certain type of physical defect that exempts the animal from Maisa Behema, and we know it can't be a regular mum, then we have to assume it's something that gives it a different status in halacha, namely not just a baal mum, but rather a tereka. So even though it's true, whether it's in the lower segment or whether it's in a higher segment, either way, it can't walk, but the meal in the Pasuk, so says the Tosfos Rosh, must be referring to where it has a change of status in halacha, meaning that it makes it a tereka. Okay, that's one answer. There's another answer from one of the Achronim, maybe the Torah Chaim, I don't remember, who says the idea is that besides that a person counts his sheep from Maisa Behema, there's also a shepherd regularly counts his sheep, he wants to know from 1 year to the next how many he has. A Trefa is not going to live a year, as we've learned before. So it's not going to eventually be over Tachas HaShovet. In a future year, it's not going to be passing under the stick. Even if this year it can, next year it's not, it's going to be dead already. So that's another way of saying that a Trefa wouldn't be included. All right, anyway, so the point is, so he says, therefore, Trefa is not included. So therefore, he says, by Zera Shava from the word Soin, neither does Rishas HaGeiz apply to it. Okay, so the question is, as long as you're learning a Zera Shava from Soin, just like we asked before, if you're learning from the word Nesina, instead of learning from Matonis, you should learn from Truma. We can ask the same thing about the Zera Shava Soin. We can say, V'leilach Soin M'Bechor. Why, in that case, would Rav Shimon not be learning instead by Zera Shava from Bechor? Where even an animal like a trefa still has the kedusha of a bechor, it still has the regular dinim of a bechor. Eventually you're going to have to bury it because you can't eat it. But still consider a bechor. So why don't we learn from a bechor? Ma bechor after the trefa, just like a bechor, the dinim of it apply even if the animal is a trefa. Operations I gaze after the trefa. So Rav Shimon should say that operations I gaze should also apply. And the answer is mistabra. It's logical. We might still have a leilamela. It's more logical if we have a choice of learning Reish HaGeiz from Bechor versus Meiser, it's more logical to learn from Meiser because they have a lot of similarities. As we know, the Gemara has done this kind of thing many times before, listing out the similarities. Shekain, number one, let's consider the similarities between Reish Lakdeis and Meiser on the one hand versus Bechor on the other hand.
There's more.
Well, that's what we're going to figure out. Number one, Zechorim. Number one, Reish Lakdeis and Meiser apply to both males and females. Bechor only applies to males. That's one difference. Number two, Tmeim. Number two, Reish Lakdeis and Meiser Behema only apply to Tahor species of animals. Reish Lakdeis, we said, only to sheep. Meiser Behema applies to cows, sheep, and goats. As opposed to, Bechor also applies to one type of non-kosher animal, a donkey, Petah Hamer. So therefore, so that's another distinction. A third one, Bimirubin, as far as having a large number of animals. As we said in our Mishnah, you need a minimum number of animals for Reish Lakdeis. We have Bishama Bissil, 2 versus 5. Meiser Behema, by definition, you need at least 10 animals. Bechor, there's no such thing. If you have one single animal and it gives birth, then you also have to purchase Bechor. That's another difference between Bechor and the other two. Not more Hummer, but therefore it's more logical if we're going to compare Reish Lakdeis to something, it's more logical so far to compare it to Meiser. It has many more similarities with Meiser Behema than it does with Bechor. Also, Meirechen. Also, neither Reish Lakdeis nor Meiser Behema is a Kedusha that's on it from when it was born, from the womb, whereas Bechor is, as soon as it's born, as soon as it comes out of the womb, it's already Kodesh. Adam, another difference is that Bechor applies also to a human being, because you have Bechor Adam, that means Pidyon Aben, whereas Reish Lakdeis and Meiser Behema apply only to animals. And yet another one, Poshut. Another one, if Poshut means the opposite of Bechor. Bechor applies only to Bechor. That's the definition. Whereas Reish Lakdeis and Meiser Behema apply no matter what the birth order of the animal was, whether it's the firstborn or the tenthborn. Anyone after the Bechor is called Parshut. Yeah, we have the same terminology in Baba Basra when we were talking about the dinim of a Bechor getting a double portion. We had over there a similar terminology, Bechor and Parshut. Yeah. Okay. And one more, Lifnei Hadibur. One more is Reish Lakdeis and Meiser, like most mitzvahs, only came into effect after Hashem gave them at Mount Kerit, as opposed to Bechor existed even in Mitzrayim, already when they were leaving Mitzrayim. Hashem was telling them, Kadosh Liko Bechor. So we have then Zchorin Tmein B'Merubin Merechan Adam Parshut Lifnei Hadibur. Lifnei Hadibur before Matan Torah. So you have seven differences between Reish Lakdeis and Meiser on the one hand and Bechor on the other hand. So that should be reason to learn Reish Lakdeis from Meiser according to the Pshitim. Okay, the question is, as the Gemara often does, Adar Abba Bechor Havalei L'Melech. On the contrary, you should think to learn from Bechor, because actually Reish Lakdeis has a lot of similarities with Bechor and not with Meiser. Namely, Shekein, now let's consider the similarities. Number one, Yosem. If the animal is an orphan, namely if mother died in childbirth, Bechor applies to it. Reish Lakdeis also applies to it. Meiser Behema does not. One of the types of animals. Yeah, that's what it means. Yosem literally means an orphan.
Yeah.
But it means, in other words, exactly that. If the animal's mother died in childbirth, the Rashi calls it based on the Gemara and Bechor, Zeh Perish Mitzvah, the Zeh Perish Chayim, the one animal, the mother, went off to die, and the other one separated out, and the other one is alive. So that's called Yosem. So you can't bring such an animal as a korban. However, it does have kedushas Bechor. It would be like a Bechor Baal. But Reish Lakdeis would apply to it. But on the other hand, Meiser Behema would not apply to it. Neither we learn from Sukkim. We're talking about it's not a Bechor. If an animal is born a Yosin and is not a Bechor, which could be. I mean, first of all, a simple case could be if the baby is a female, then it's not a Bechor. But also you could have the mother miscarried before. There's any number of possibilities. But whatever, the point is that this case of Yosin, you don't put it in the pen for Meiser Behema. We learn that from Sukkim in the last paragraph of Bechorus. But if it's a Bechor, it would have Kedushas Bechorah. If you're shearing it, you do have Reish Lakdeis. So therefore, you have a similarity between Reish Lakdeis and Bechor that you don't have with Meiser. That's Yosin. Another one is Shalokhoi. Another one is if you buy an animal, Reish Lakdeis applies equally well to an animal that you bought or one that was born in your herd. Bechor also. On the other hand, Meiser Behema does not apply to animals that you bought, as we'll learn also in Bechorus. A third difference, Beshutfus, also when you have partners. Now, we learned before, fine, Rabbi Loi says that Reish Lakdeis, your partner, if it belongs to partners, the Chachamim disagreed, and the Halacha is like the Chachamim. Bechor also applies to an animal that belongs to partners. we said over there, that's there. We said we wanted to say a point that Rabbi Loi would agree to that. We said maybe not, but whatever. The point is the Chacham holds that way, and that's not halacha. Whereas Ma'aseh Behemah does not apply to animals owned by partners. Again, as we're learning before this. Yet another difference, Nosnoi. Another difference is if somebody gave you an animal as a gift, same idea. Bechor would apply to it, Rishon LeGeiz applies to it, but Ma'aseh Behemah does not apply to it. And another one, Bifnei. So what does that mean? Rashi says, Bifnei means, it's short for saying, Bifnei HaBayit. That Bechor and Rish Sagez apply whether the Beis Hamikdash is standing or not. Even nowadays, where you have an animal, it's a Bechor, you still have to Rish Sagez. Bifnei HaBayit is the usual expression in Shas. So it means those apply, Bechor and Rish Sagez apply whether the Beis Hamikdash is standing or not. Ma'aseh Behemah does not apply when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. Actually, the Rashi brings from Bechoris that midah raita Rashi brings from Bechoris that it doesn't apply when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, but it's really because of the zera of Chacham. But in which case, the Torah was asked, so what are we even talking about? We're trying to figure out which zera shava is more logical to follow. What does the Takana of Chacham have anything to do with that? So therefore, Tosfos explains, rather, the Girsa should be not Bifnei, but Lifnei. Meaning, in other words, we have a din that applies uniquely to Ma'aseh Behemah, which we've touched on a few times. We'll talk about it extensively in Bechoros, says the Shem, that if you miscount the animals, and you miscount the ninth one as number 10, or you miscount the 11th one as number 10, it still has a certain Girsa, under certain circumstances, yeah. As opposed to, there's no such... Yeah, we mentioned Nizvachim, yeah. So as opposed to, there's no such thing with Reishis HaGeiz and there's no such thing with Bechor. So that's another difference between Reishis HaGeiz and Ma'aseh. If you miscount, there's no such thing as miscounting by Bechor. It's either a Bechor or it's not. And there's no such thing as miscounting by Reishis HaGeiz. So that's another difference. Also, Koyin, another difference is that both Bechor and Reishis HaGeiz have to be given to the Koyin, as opposed to Ma'aseh, the owner himself eats it. He brings it out of the carbon, but he eats the meat of it. And B'kedusha, yet another difference is that as far as Kedusha, what does that mean? Rashi brings two explanations. A Bechor, you don't have to be Machdish because it already has Kedusha from when it was born. Reishis HaGeiz, you don't have to be Machdish because it has no Kedusha. So there's nothing verbal that you have to say, this has the Kedusha of Reishis HaGeiz. As opposed to Ma'aseh Behemah, you have to make it Kedush. You have to strike it with a stick and declare this is Ma'aseh. So therefore, you have something that you have to do with that you don't have to do with the other two.
So what did he do?
No, eventually then he takes all the ones with the red paint on them and brings them as a carbon. Okay, so that's one explanation of Kedusha. Then Rashi says another explanation of Kedusha is that the Bechor and Reishis HaGeiz are both considered the property of the Kohen in the sense that he could be Makadish a woman with it, which, as we said before, is considered in the Gemara the acid test of whether something really belongs to you. As opposed to Ma'aseh is not really your property because it's not really your property. It has to be brought to the carbon. Well, Bechor also has to be brought to the carbon. But the point is that it says in it, lo yimocher v'lo yigo, you don't have to sell it and not allowed to redeem it, the Ma'aseh. So therefore, that's another way. The Bechor, once it's shechted, once it has a mum, the Kohen shechted, he's allowed to sell the meat.
Yeah, but not before.
That's fine, but the point is, at least at some point, you're allowed to, as opposed to with Ma'aseh, you're not allowed to, period. Okay, Rashi says I don't like that explanation, though, because the fact of the matter is, actually, while the animal is alive, you would be able to, it is considered yours to the extent that you can be Mekadosh a woman. Once it's shechted, you're right, Mekshokhan Gavoya Kazako, you're only acquiring a portion of the meat from Hashem's table, so therefore it doesn't really belong to you, but before it's shechted, you would be able to. So Rashi prefers the first explanation, which is a Bechor, you don't have to verbally be Makdish, and Reishis HaGeiz, you don't have to either, whereas Ma'aseh Behemah, you do. And one more, Umechira, one more difference is that a Bechor, the Kohen is allowed to sell it, and Reishis HaGeiz, the Kohen is allowed to sell it. Again, Ma'aseh, you're not allowed to sell. So you have many similarities between Reishis HaGeiz and Bechor versus Ma'aseh, and let's count them up. Yosem, Shalotza, the Shotfos, Nosne, Bifne, Koyen, Bikdusha, Omasira. So we have eight, and before we had seven, and eight should be seven. The Hanach Mefishin, and these that we had now are more, because eight is greater than seven. So why doesn't Rav Shimon compare it to Bechor, and therefore say that it would apply to a Tzedekah? seven similarities in my Sbahima? The answer is, on the other hand, Poshut me Poshut Odifle. Yes, but Rav Shimon gives greater weight to one of the similarities that we mentioned in my Sbahima, namely that it applies to a non-Bukhur. He considers that to outweigh some of the other ones. So that one has greater weight, and therefore the seven can be the eight. We've had that kind of thing before in the Gemara. We'll say that one of them has greater weight than the others.
Parshut
has greater weight than the others. Yeah. Okay. So therefore, that's where Rav Shimon gets that he compares. So that's what we're saying. That's why he compares it to Ma'aseh Behema, and therefore he says just like Ma'aseh Behema, you don't put in the Tereis. Neither does Reishis HaGeiz apply to Tereis. Again, the Chachamim disagree with that.
They either
they don't learn the Zeta Shava at all, or yeah, maybe they go with Bukhur. Yeah. Either way, the point is that. Okay. The truth, it's interesting actually that Rambam doesn't bring any of this concept at all, whether Reishis HaGeiz or Matnas Kohuna apply to Tereis or not, which leads to a bit of discussion in the Mefarshim on the Rambam, why indeed he doesn't bring that in one way or the other. He should take a side on it, but okay.
So the minhag is what? You don't have
the minhag, we said before, the minhag is that we don't do Reishis HaGeiz in Chutz La'aretz anyway, and even in Eretz Yisrael, it's a rare thing to do for a number of reasons, one of which is we don't have prayer in a year. But practically speaking, it's not necessarily a day-to-day thing. Okay. Fine. Then the Mishnah says, Reishis HaGeiz ain't a noyig ala barachelim. We said that Reishis HaGeiz applies only to sheep. So, minohanimili, where do we know that from? And in particular, Choisvis points out, the question is not so much what makes us say, not maybe so much that what would make us say that it doesn't apply to, that it doesn't apply to cattle. Fine, cattle, I mean, they have fur, but they don't really have anything that you actually shear off per se. But rather the question is, usually the word soin includes both sheep and goats. So why are we here? Are we limiting in only sheep? When it says, soin chasit and loy, why are we limiting in only sheep? So, Omer of Chista, Asir Giza Giza, because we make a Zera Shava based on the word Giza. Then you have a pasuk in Eov, umi gaze kvasa yitchamon. He warms himself with the gaze, with the fleece of my sheep. This is a section over there where Eov is talking about, I've always done mitzvahs, I've always been careful not to do averus, so why am I suffering so terribly, etc. So he mentions how he was always generous to the poor people, that I give them more. Ultimately, the answer is that we know from the earlier psukim at the beginning of the year, because Hashem is testing Eov, that Hashem allowed the Satan to have control over Eov's property and over his possessions and even over in order to test him to see how he withstands the test. We learned about it in Bava Basra. Yeah, we learned because the Satan points out that Eov's a tzaddik because sure he's always had it easy in life. Let's see how he is when he's tested. And in fact, the Gemara in Bava Basra says that the Satan meant Moshem Shemayim because he didn't want Eov's person to overshadow Abraham. So like Abraham passed through many difficult tests and he withstood it. So let's see if Eov is made out of the same stuff. Anyway, the point is. Anyway, the point is that so you have the word gaze over there, and there it mentions sheep. Malahal and kvasim, not kan kvasim. So since over there it mentions sheep, and we gaze kvasai, so the same thing over here, it means sheep.
So how do we know?
Well, Rechelim means sheep in general. It doesn't just mean you. It doesn't just mean females. We'll talk about that on Omer Beis. But yeah, no, Rechelim does not only mean females. In fact, we'll talk about it on Omer Beis, on Lashon Torah, on Lashon Chachamim, but yeah. Okay. So we see that it applies only to sheep. Tosfos asks, since when do we learn Zera Shava from Torah to the rest of Nach? So Tosfos says, maybe it's Gilui Milta Ba'alma, it's just explaining what the word gaze is. But Tosfos says later on, the continuation of the Gemara seems to be implying that's a full-fledged Zera Shava. Okay, but Tosfos says, still, when we say you can't learn Zera Shava, Divrei Torah, Divrei Kabbalah, Lo Yalfinan, that's to learn a new halacha. Here, it's basically, we're confirming what does the word gaze mean. Okay. Fine. So the question is, v'neilav giza gizim b'chur, why not learn the gzeira shava instead from b'chur? The Tanya, as the Braith says, when the Pasuk says, loisavit b'chur sherecha v'loisogaz b'chur tenecha, you're not allowed to do work with the b'chur of your ox, and you're not allowed to shear the b'chur of your sheep. Aim the elashur ba'avod of its own b'giza. So based on that Pasuk, you would only know you're not allowed to have the ox work, and you're not allowed to have the sheep, you're not allowed to shear the sheep. How do we know the reverse is also true? You can't have the sheep work and you can't shear the cattle. Talmud Lomar, loy saved v'loy sogay. Therefore, the pasuk says you shouldn't work and you shouldn't shear. So the and combines them together, the vav combines them together and makes it that each din belongs to each one. So therefore, so again, same way over there, as we say that so over there we say that even though the pasuk says leistogas b'chot seinecha, and nevertheless it doesn't only apply to sheep, it applies to any animal that has a b'chot, including cattle. So why don't we say, or at least it includes goats? So why shouldn't we say the same thing over here, that we're going to learn Xerah Shalva from Reish HaGez to that, and from that to Reish HaGez, and say, therefore, that it applies not only to sheep, but also to goats? The answer is, okay, but the answer is that the Pasuk says you should give him, you should give to the Kohen the fleece, implying that you're giving it for him to be able to wear, not you giving it for him for something that he can only make a sack out of. When you shear the fur, the hair, whatever that you shear off that you could shear off a cow, no, a cow is coarse stuff. It's not suitable for making clothes out of. The only thing you could do is make sack cloth out of it. And then the pasuk is implying that you have to give him something that he could wear.
So loy means
only to him, something that he personally could wear. Yeah, something that the Kohen personally could wear, which is. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, Elamath and Notzishal Izim Lechayev. Okay, but still, why shouldn't Notzishal Izim? Notzishal Izim is, no, it's Notzishal Izim means feathers. One second. Shal Izim of goats. But what it means is like this. Rashi describes the hair of goats is usually not sheared. It's usually pulled off. So in that sense, similar to feathers of birds that are usually pulled off. Elsewhere, Tosfos talks about that. One second. Actually, Tosfos elsewhere talks about there are two types of hair that a goat has. You have a fine undercoat, which is normally pulled out. That's what the Gemara calls over here, notes or something. And then you have an overcoat of coarser hair, and that's usually shorn. So fine, the over hair, same thing, loy below the sakai, or you can use it for a sackcloth. But the question is, why shouldn't it apply to the fine undercoat, which could be used? Not under the skin. So we're talking about like you have smaller. Okay, think of like with a bird, for example, right? You have the smaller downy feathers that are close to the skin, and then you have the larger feathers. So with a goat, you have a similar kind of thing. You have the finer hairs that are closer to the skin, the mohair, cashmere, and other such fabrics are made from that. And then you have the coarser. Then you have the it comes from a certain subspecies of goats that lives. I believe, I'm pretty sure it's from some kind of goat. Anyway, whatever it is, fine. Mohair, whatever. The point is, you have Angora, whatever. You have breeds of goats that have finer underhair. So why, and that's called Neutzischalism. So why shouldn't we say that's Chayev also? A Kohen could make himself clothing out of that. Okay, the answer is, but in a Giza of a letter. Okay, but it has to also be something that you shear. And that you don't shear, that you just pluck. So therefore, it's not the same thing. Okay, the question is, man shamath le lahai svara. Okay, which Tana do you find that says that concept, that when the pasuk says gaze, it has to dab to be something that you shear, not something that you pluck? That would only be Rav Yosi. That would only be according to Rav Yosi. But as we say further down on the Amud, hamoydi Rav Yosi b'midei de'orchei. But even Rav Yosi himself agrees that if there's something which normally is harvested in some other way, then the din also applies there. We're going to say further on the Amud that, for example, when we have the din of peah, even though the pasuk describes that peah is from your harvest of a kutzrachem, which implies that you reap with a sickle or whatever, nevertheless, Rav Yosi agrees, as we'll say further on the Amud, that crops that are normally picked, that are normally harvested some other way, for example, by picking them, you are higher than peah. So by the same logic, we should say over here, fine. Gaze would mean that. So gaze would mean, fine, it has to be something that normally should, it would say like this, it applies to something that's normally shorn, like wool, but also it would apply to something which is, it would also apply to something which is normally plucked, like the undercoat of a goat. The answer is no. So we can't say that we're learning from Titin Loi. That schlugs it up. So we can't say we're learning from Omigez Kvas, right? We can't say that we're learning from Titin Loi. So rather we need a different answer. Rather, it's like Rabbi Shurban Levi says later on Kuflam Fest, that Rabbi Shurban Levi says when we talk about the amount of wool that you have to give the Kohen, the Pasuk says, right after this Pasuk, about giving him Reish HaGez, the next Pasuk says that the Kohen has been chosen by Hashem Lamoid L'Shores, to stand and serve before Hashem, implying, therefore, Dover HaRoy L'Shivus. What do you have to give him, or how much do you have to give him? Something that is suitable to serve in the Bismikah. So later on Kuflam Ches, the Gemara is going to use that to deduce what's the minimum amount of wool you have to give the Kohen, the amount that you can use to make one of the big day corona. Over here, what we're saying is, therefore, the material has to be something that's suitable to be made into the big day corona. Now, the big day corona They didn't use goat hair in them. They used goat hair for the tapestries of the Mishkan. Fine, but we're not talking about that. For the actual clothes of the Kohanim, the only materials they used are wool. No, in the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash. The clothes of the Kohanim. What? In the Beis Hamikdash, they didn't have Yiriyos. So the Beis Hamikdash had a Koroches on the very door. Fine, the Koroches, Chelos, Vagomen, Shelas, Shani, they didn't use goat hair in them. But never mind that. The point is we're talking about the clothes of the Kohanim. The clothes of the Kohanim, both in the Mishkan and in the Beis Hamikdash, the only fabrics used in them were wool and linen. There was no goat hair. Therefore, Lamed Lasharis teaches us not only the amount that you have to give, enough to make one of the big zikkurim, as we'll say later, but also the material that it has to be, something that could conceivably be used for the big zikkurim, and that can only be wool. You don't use goat hair. Okay. So therefore, it's Hachanami. So the same thing over here. Dover Haroi Lasharis. What do you have to give the Kohen? Only something that's suitable to serve in the Beis Hamikdash.
How do you know goat is not suitable?
Because the Pasuk says that you use tchelas, vagomen, selas, shani, and all of those are various kinds of, all of those are wool dyed in various colors. None of those are goat hair dyed in various colors.
Wool cannot be from other animals?
Wool, but what's considered wool in halacha is only from sheep. Other creatures that may have wool, like for example, nowadays they have like llama wool and alpaca wool and whatever, yeah, that's not considered wool in halacha. And goat hair is not called wool anyway, it's called noisa. Okay, fine. Okay, so the question is, Ela Giza Giza Lamayosa. Okay, but we did mention Xeda Shava over there before from Giza, from Gez Kvasa Yiskanam, that he warms himself with a fleece of my sheep. So what are we doing with that Xeda Shava after all, if we're not learning from that, the din about that it's sheep's wool as opposed to goat hair? The answer is Lachadatana Dveda Bishmal. We use it for what they learned in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tanur Rabbi Shmuel, kvostim shatzamran kosher, sheep that have very hard wool, p'turim mereish lageiz. Your pots are from giving mereish lageiz from them. Now we learned before. We said before on kuflam and hay, we said that you have male versus female sheep, with male sheep's the male sheep's what do you call it, wool is stiffer, and the females is softer, but nevertheless, even the males are suitable for making clothing. Here we're talking about if you have a breed of sheep where the wool is exceptionally stiff, and like I said, it's not suitable for making clothing. So you're part of from Rishon HaGeiz.
Most of the time,
yeah. Shenemo, the gaze, glossy, is common. That's what we're learning from the Pasuk Iyah. Since Iyah describes gaze as something that a poor person could warm himself with, that implies it has to be something soft enough to be able to make it into warming clothing. If it's too hard to do that, then you're part of. Okay.
So you have to evaluate it.
Yeah. If you're a sheep herder, or if you're a sheep breeder, you're gonna know where you're gonna. Okay. Fine. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Toni Choda goes as the id as Toni Choda. We learn in one brisa goes as the izim. If somebody shears the goat. Now we said before that goats. Usually you have the over hair, the coarser hair you shear, the under hair, which is finer, you usually pluck. Suppose instead he does shear it, or v'shotcha v'sarachelim, or suppose he rinses the sheep, and then in the course of rinsing them, so to clean them up, in the course of that, some wool gets pulled out, potter, then he would be potter because neither of those is called gaze. Because in the case of gaze means shearing, and we said before also that it means that's the sheep. Okay, so the problem is, the Tanya Idach goes is in potter v'shotcha v'sarachelim chayiv. Another braisa says, I agree if you shear goats, you potter, because goats are not semer, and it's not used for bigger corner. But if you wash off the sheep and some wool comes off, chayev, then the shoytev is chayev. So how do we reconcile the braises?
There's
a potter. The shoytev is chayev chayev, but if he rinses off the sheep and some wool comes off, so they both agree on the goats, right? But they're disagreeing on the sheep, right? So what is it? The answer is like Hasha, Horabon and Horab Yosi. You have two different opinions over here. You have a Chachamim and you have Rabbi Yosi. Detanya, as we learn in a Braise, in a different context, the Pasuk says leket sircha. The Pasuk says that you have to leave leket, which is the individual stalks of grain that fall down when you're harvesting, the leket of your harvest, of your reaping. The word sircha implies below leket kitul. You do not have to leave leket from if you're picking it by hand. So if you're usually, how do you harvest wheat? You take a sickle and you hold a bunch of grain and you chop it. Well, not nowadays they have tractors. Fine. The point is that in those days that's how they did it. As opposed to you pick out the stalks individually. So if you pick them individually, then we're saying that we're saying that the din of lechet doesn't apply to that. No. Even if you drop some in the course of that, it's not lechet kasircha because you're not doing kasir. You're not cutting.
When the trifle is considered
kasircha? I have no idea. Maybe. Yeah, could be. Okay. Anyway, the Braisa continues. Rabbi Yossi says that the definition of leket is only something that happens during the time of weeping. So the question is, what is Rabbi Yossi adding? Rabbi Yossi hainu tana kama. Isn't Rabbi Yossi saying the same thing as the tana kama? And so the answer is kula Rabbi Yossi. He actually, the whole Braisa is telling us Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Namely, what the Braisa means. When it says Rabbi Yossi Omer, it's not presenting a new opinion, it's a continuation. Share Rabbi Yossi Omer, namely because Rabbi Yossi says that the definition, ain leket el abba machmas kotzer. Now, apparently, the Chachamim disagree with him on that, so that even though it's not mentioned in the Braisa. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi would hold when the Pasuk says, kotzer, leket kotzercha, means specifically kotzer, no other method of harvesting, is according to Rabbi Yossi. So therefore, by the same logic, he would say no other way other than shearing the sheep. So therefore, if you pull out wool in the course of washing them, you'd be potter. Whereas the Chachamim, who say that you'd be chayev in leket in that case, even if you're plucking the ears of grain or whatever from the ground, they would also hold that you're also chayev in relation to that case if you're plucking out the wool from the sheep. They're saying it's just the usual ways you do kotzer, and the usual ways you do gaze, but it doesn't have to be that. However, Rav Acha Brei de Rava tells Rav Ashi, it's not so simple because Moed Rav Yosi the Midei de Urche. Now, Rav Yosi will agree when you have a certain kind of crop where the normal thing is to pluck them out of the ground, then he will agree that that is still considered kotzer and you chayev in peyah. In other words, what Rav Yosi would be saying, what he would be disagreeing with the Chachamim, is a crop like, for example, wheat or other kinds of grain or whatever. No, it's not a contradiction. What we're saying, he's clarifying, he's saying like this. When it comes, for example, to wheat or barley or other kinds of things like that, where the normal thing is to harvest them with a sickle or whatever, so then if you pull them out of the ground, Rabbi Yossi is saying you're potter. On the other hand, you have things like, for example, onions, garlic, other kinds of things, that the normal way is to pull them out of the ground. So Rabbi Yossi will agree that that's included in Ketuvah. And he will say, therefore, that they are chayev and leket and the other matnas. And we know
it's the normal fashion.
When it's a normal, right. And how do we, and we know this. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi Omer, kotzer. When the Pasuk says the kotzer, the reaping, ainly of a kotzer. So you would only know from that it includes if you're actually reaping, if you're actually cutting it. Oiker minayin. How do we know the same din applies if you're pulling it out of the ground? Like onions, it actually gives another example. Let's say, for example, lentils. You pull the whole plant out of the ground, whatever. So how do we know that the Talmud Lomer lichtzer? Therefore, you have another word in the pasuk that mentions that you're not allowed to take the peah lichtzer to harvest. So that extra word means even if the harvesting is being done in a different way, for example, pulling it out of the ground. What about kotzer would be? No. Once we have an extra word, then we're saying it's more generalizing. Okay. What about toilish minayin? What about when you have things that you usually pull them out from the ground, but not with the roots? And Rashi gives us an example: beans. You pull them off the stems, but you don't pull the whole plant out of the ground. Here again, you have three different things. You have ones where you reap them, like wheat and barley, where you cut the stalk with a sickle and you leave the bottom part of the stalk attached to the ground. Then you have things like lentils that grow. Aside from what we're going to talk about, lentils grow on plants above the ground. And what you do is you pull out the entire plant from the ground. That's the normal way to harvest them. You pluck them, and then you have things where you pull them off the stem by hand. For example, beans without pulling the whole plant out of the ground. So how do we know it applies in that case? Says Rabbi Yossi, "Kam alayma b'kutzrucha." Therefore, you have yet another pasuk that mentions in your harvesting. So each of those words teaches us a different way of. Yeah. Okay. Right. Ravina says to Ravashi, as a matter of fact, actually, we have a proof. We have another proof that Rav Yossi holds that way, not only from this Braisa, but also from a Mishnah. A Mishnah says in Peah, Malbinus Bitsolim Shabain Hayerek, malbinos of onions that are among the vegetables. So in other words, the way is the person arranged his field that he has rows of other kinds of vegetables growing over there. And then every so often, interspersed between them, he has plots where he's growing onions.
It's not to lie
because they're far enough apart and they're visibly separate. I don't know, they have different shield in different places. Sometimes you don't need anything apart, you just need them to be visibly separate. Whatever, that's the point is you're allowed to do it. So now this is how he has his field arranged. So he has rows of vegetables, and in between the rows he has plots where he's growing onions. The word malbinos, by the way, Meforshim on the Barjanura on the Mishnah explained that a very typical thing to do this kind of thing with would be to grow grain in those individual plots in between. Grain is often called in the Gemara Sodeh Lavan, which means a white field, because a field of grain from a distance looks white. So even when you're, in this case, you're using it to plant onions, the word malbinos is still used. In modern Hebrew, they use the word malbin to mean a rectangle, because like you have rectangular plots. Anyway. Onions is the problem. So malbinus b'tzalim shebein ha'yeret. So if you have these plots of onions between the rows of vegetables, the question is how do you get payah from them? Rabbi Yossi and the payah mikol echad echad. Rabbi Yossi says you have to get payah individually from each plot of onions. The plots don't combine because they're separated by the rows of vegetables. The chum say it's good enough. You can leave payah in one of the plots of onions on behalf of all of them because they consider it all connected. So the point is that even Rabbi Yossi agrees that you have, both Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim agree on the basic premise that you have to take payah from onions. Now, even though onions are not, you don't reap them from the ground, you pull them out, roots and all. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yossi is saying they're chayav in payah. So we see, therefore, that Rabbi Yossi holds that it's not just crops that are harvested by reaping, but also any crop as long as you're harvesting in a normal way for that. For example, with onions, by pulling them out of the ground, then they're chayav in payah. Rashi mentions, by the way, in this connection, usually vegetables are potter from peah, because one of the rules for produce to be chayav in peah is it has to be something that's stored long-term, and most vegetables can't be stored long-term or without refrigeration. Onions aren't like that, though. You can store them long-term. Therefore, they're chayav in peah. Okay. All right, so the bottom line is, returning to our point over here, Rabbi Yossi would say, though, that if you have a crop that usually is wheat, then instead you pull it out of the ground, you'd be potter from payah. By the same logic, he would say if you have wool that usually is sheared, and instead you pull it out, then you're potter. The Chachamim would disagree with him, and yes. The halacha is, I think you actually have some Rishonim Paskin like the Chachamim and some Paskin like Rabbi Yossi. I don't remember, I'm not sure about that point, though. Fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, when we say that you have to have a lot of sheep to be chayiv in Reish Lagei, how many is a lot? So we said Bet-Shamay says two and Bet-Hillel says five. Bet-Shamay brought a process where it mentions two sheep, Eglas Bako Shteit Son. So we see that two already can be called Son. Bet-Hillel brought a process for Chomesh Son Asuyos from when Abigail was bringing to David. So they say that means that five is the minimum to be called Son. So the question is, this Shlemel of Bishamai, so I can understand what Bishamai would say, what's Bishamai doing with Bishillel's Pasuk? They would say, I don't need to do anything with Bishillel's Pasuk. Kautinami Ikrut Son. Bottom line is, you see that two is already enough to be called Son. So therefore they say that's because the Pasuk says, but why does Bishillel seem to ignore Bishamai's Pasuk, or Shnei Son, and only focus on the Pasuk with Abigail, or five? Because by the pasuk with Abigail, it doesn't just say that she brought five sheep. It says she brought five son asuyos. Now asuyos literally means prepared. We don't need. It literally means prepared. Prepared asuyos, made. In other words, prepared.
Prepared.
Prepared. Yeah. But the Gemara is doubting from it, because after all, that culture of detail was not important for us to know. It wouldn't matter whether she brought live sheep or prepared ones. So omakro asuyos. So it means sh'osos beis mitzvahs. It means that when you have these sheep, you now have two mitzvahs that can be accomplished with them. Reishas hageiz umatonis. Okay, so the question. So that's why we would say that only applies to five. But since the pasuk mentions over there asuyos, that implies that only when you have five do you have these two mitzvahs.
What does it imply?
Because asuyos implies that you have asuyos in the plural, that now you have mitzvahs that can be done involving these five sheep.
Why not two?
Because two, it's because the pasuk doesn't mention two. The pasuk mentions that Abigail brought five sheep. Vasuyas would imply, therefore, that when you have five sheep, you now have a chance to accomplish two mitzvahs. Okay, the question is, how do you know it applies to Reish Lakish? Maybe the two mitzvahs that you can do with five sheep are, number one, the mitzvah of B'chor, and number two, Matzonis. What do you mean? B'chor, Chodim, B'chor, what do you mean? You're chayiv and b'chor, you only have one animal. You don't have anything extra, you don't have anything added by having five animals as far as the chayiv of b'chor.
What kind of answer is that?
Well, so the question is, so you can say the same thing as far as matonis. You shech only one animal, you chayiv and matonis. So why are we mentioning that you have two mitzvahs, reish lakish and matonis? There's no chid, if you're saying that, in other words, the Torah's Chaim explains the question. The implication of asuya is, sounds like you're saying that there's two new mitzvahs that you have now that you wouldn't have had before.
Right.
But if you're talking about new mitzvahs, you can't, b'chor you only need one, but matonis you also only need one. So if you're saying that the two mitzvahs are matonis and reish lakish, you don't have any newer mitzvah with five that you wouldn't have had with four or three or whatever. So why are we even mentioning matonis? If you're going to say that it doesn't matter whether it's new or not, well then b'chor is not new either. So then yeah. Okay. So the answer is, Elo Amar Rav Ashi, we're learning from the word asuyas a little bit different. Asuyas shema asoyis es ba'alehen. We're darshaning from the word asuyas that they compel their owner. The word also can mean to do, but then there's a verb form in Hebrew which is called pl, which is like you make somebody else do something. So there's also, which is you did something, and then there's me'aseh, that you made somebody else do something. You make somebody else do something. So shema'aseh says ba'alehen, that they compel their owner of Omer Slo, and they tell him, kum asei mitzvah. Get up, do a mitzvah. You have a new mitzvah to accomplish. So it's not two mitzvahs, but we said before, we're talking only one mitzvah. And that mitzvah is Reish Lakish. Because that's the only one. Because the mitzvah is asei. And that's the only one by elimination. There's no other mitzvah that we could say that you have something new when you have five. It can't be b'chor, because that applies only to one. It's not matonis, because it also applies only to one. It can't be ma'aseh b'hemim, 10 to that. So by elimination, it has to be, yeah.
Fine, so you just need elimination, then...
Okay, so that's the point. No, but the point is, shema'aseh t'sfalein, that they're forcing their owner to do a mitzvah that he wouldn't have had with less than that.
Okay,
so it must be reish lakish.
That's as far.
Yeah. Okay. Fine, the point is that if we didn't have the word asuyas, we wouldn't know that concept. Right. So how would we know it? We without the word asuyas. No, without the word asuyas, we would do like the shama and say tushin. The point is, the word asuyas is teaching us that. And in fact, we have a portion that points out, you have a kriyoksiv over there actually in the pasuk. You have the word in the pasuk is written without the yod in the middle. It's written ayin sin vav vav sof. We read it as asuyas. So therefore, we have a reason to darshan from the word, as we more often do in the kriyoksiv. Tanya, we learn in a braisa, another opinion besides the two of. Okay, but again, this isn't the Gzeira Shava. This is we know the Torah tells us the Torah tells us Vedesh's gate tzoin kotzitim. Like we need the definition of tzoin. So we're learning the definition of tzoin from this one. Yeah. So like Tosu said before, definition of the Gemara. Julie Mills about it. Okay. Tanya Dvei Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. I remember Shmuel. We learn from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, who said in the name of his father. Not two like the Shammai, and not five like the Tzilul, but rather Arba. Once you have four sheep, then you're Chayiv in Reish Lakish. Shenema, because you have a positive that mentions four in connection with Tzoyin. But Arba Tzoyin talks about that. When a person steals a sheep, the positive tells him, and resells it to somebody else, or he shechts it, he has to pay back four sheep instead of the one that he stole. So therefore we see that four can be called, that four sheep can be called Tzoyin. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Omer Rebbe. So Rebbe says in that connection, you know what? Even if their words, the Shammai and Basilol's respective opinions, even if they were based on Pesukim from Chumash, the Divrei Beribi Kabbalah, and Beribi, which is Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi, Beribi means the great Talmud Chacham, and his words only came from Kabbalah, from Nach, and non Divrei Beribi Shoyimin, we would still have to follow the words of Beribi. We'll see why in a second. So Rebbe is saying, even if that were the case, we'd have to follow him. But Hoshikin should divrem divrei Kabbalah, but divrei divrei Torah. How much more so in this case, where Beis Shammai and Betul are basing themselves on Sukkim from Nach, from Yeshaya and from Shmuel respectively, divrei Torah. Whereas Beribi, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi, who's saying in the name of Rabbi Yosi, is actually bringing it based on a pasuk in the Torah. So it should be a very strong reason to listen to his opinion. So the Gemara says, okay, fair enough, but why is Rebbe saying that even if it were the other way around, even if the Shammai and the Tull had proofs from Chumash, and Rebbe Shmuel but Rebbe Yossi only had a proof from Nach, we would still have to listen to him? Why should we have to listen to him? Are you going to say because he's a third opinion who's mediating between them, and we would listen to the mediator? No. We say in a number of places in Shas that you don't that a third opinion is not a mediation. Meaning, in other words, Rashi, because in other words, Rashi says like this: when would we say that a hachra? When would we say that a mediator's opinion is valid, and then the halacha could be like it? If Rashi gives an example, you have, for example, a Gemara in Shabbos discussing a situation over there involving little scraps of cloth. When are they makabel truma and when not? So Rabbi Eliezer, yes, the Rabbi Eliezer says whether they're muhan, whether you designated them in advance for use or not, they are makabel truma. Rabbi Yeshua says whether you designated them or you didn't, they're not makabel truma. And then you have Rabbi Akiva says if they've been pre-designated, then they're makabel truma. If not, then they're not. So that would be an example of a hachra. Because what it means is Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua both agree there might have been a reason to distinguish between Mukhan and She'en and Mukhan. They're just saying, I don't consider that to be valid in this case. But then Rabbi Akiva can say, okay, in the particular case of Mukhan, I hold like one opinion, and in the particular case of Mukhan, I hold like the other opinion. As opposed to, suppose that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua had just said, Rabbi Eliezer says always Tomei, Rabbi Yeshua says always Tahar, and then Rabbi Akiva comes and makes a distinction, that would be a hachra shlishis, because that would be he's bringing in a new distinction which neither of them necessarily even holds is a valid distinction. So the same thing over here: if the Shammai holds two and the Tzillah holds five, then why should, just because Rabbi Yossi is saying four, that's not a valid reason to follow his opinion just because he's mediating between them? That's not considered mediation. So why would Rebbe be saying that even if his only proof was from Nach and their proofs were from Chumash, we would still have to listen to him?
The answer is no shlishis.
If it's not a cross shlishis, right? The answer is Amar Rabbi Yechanan b'kishmua Amra. Rabbi Yossi did not just say this halacha in his own name. He said it in the name of something that he had heard. Namely, he had said it in the name of Chagai Tzali and Malachi, the Nevi'im from the beginning of the second Mishnah. We don't pass in halacha, but that's when the Navi is wearing his Navi hat. Every Navi is also a Talmud Chacham. So as a Navi, he's not entitled to pass in halacha, Torah Lo B'Shamayim. But as a Talmud Chacham, he can pass in halacha. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that there is the last word in halacha. You had other Chachamim in that time. So Rabbi Yossi had a Kabbalah that Chagai Tzali and Malachi had said that it applies only to four. Obviously, the Shammai and the Tzillah had learned from their respective Rebbeim, going back to earlier opinions, that disagreed with that. So therefore, but that's why Rebbe is saying, given that Rabbi Yossi's opinion has a very known, distinguished pedigree going all the way back to Chagai Tzali and Malachi, that would be a very strong reason to follow it.
Not because it's
but because it has, yeah. So, right. Okay, I mean, on the face of it, the halacha should be like him, and if I remember correctly, the tour actually passed him that way. On the other hand, the Rambam passed him like our Stam Mishnah, that's fine.
Okay. So we go by the Rambam.
And Shulchan Aruch, I think it brings both opinions, but yeah. Okay, fine. Rabbi Yosef ben Horkinas, then Rabbi Yosef ben Horkinas says that it's not just that you need five. He says that each of them produces mona, mona, uksan. Each one of them produces 1.5 monas weight of wool. So we calculated it when you learned the Mishnah. We said, and Rashi makes the calculation over here. It means that it comes out, each one has to be producing 37.5 sloyim weight of wool. A sella is a fourth, 37.5 sloyim weight of wool. And a sella is a 4/5 of an ounce. So 37.5 comes out to around 30 ounces. So the Joseph and Hokinath said that each sheep of the five has to be producing at least about 30 ounces of wool, and the Chachamim say kol shel.
And how much is it in volume?
I don't know. I never weighed 30 ounces of wool, so I have no idea. Okay. Anyway. Okay, so the question is, so again, the Joseph and Hokinath have said that you need to have at least that amount, that you need to have each of them is producing at least mono, mono, cross. And the Chachamim disagreed with that and said kol shel. So become a Kohen. So the question is, what does Chachamim mean by Kohen? Kohen on the surface means any amount, even if you have a tiny amount. But do they necessarily mean that?
Kohen is not
it amounts to the same thing. Kohen sometimes can mean a smaller amount, but not necessarily a tiny amount. So Omer Rav Mona Upras Uvad Shiyum Chumosha. So Rav says the Chachamim would agree with Rav Joseph and Hokinas's figure of a mona and a half. However, they would say that it's enough if they're divided in five. In other words, Rav Joseph and Hokinas says you need that amount individually from each of the five sheep. The Chachamim would say it's enough to have collectively that amount, the 37 and a half shloim from between all the five sheep, as long as each one produces at least one fifth of that total. In other words, so if we're talking 37 and a half shloim, so we're talking again. Let's do numbers. 37 and a half shloim total. We're saying that each one has to produce 20% of that. So that would mean, in other words, each one has to produce 7.5 shloim. If, let's say, you have one produces only 7 shloim and a different one produces 8, Rav says that they'd be possible. Each one has to be producing at least 7.5, and the aggregate between the five of them has to be at least 37.5. That's how Rav explains the whole
thing. No less than 20%, basically.
It means each one has to produce no less than 20% of the total, which is 7.5, right? And then as long as you have a total, and then as long as they say you have a total of at least 37.5, then yes. Okay. That's Rav. Or Shmuel or Mashishim. Shmuel says no. What the Chachamim mean by Kol Shehu is that you have to have the total amount, it has to be 60 shloim. One second. The noisen sela achas lakoyim. And then what you do is, out of that, you give one sela of wool to the koyim. Now the Mishnah said you give 5 shloim, so the Gemara later on is going to ask on Shmuel. So Shmuel is saying you need shishim. Does Shmuel agree with Rav about the point that you have to have that each one of them has to be producing at least one fifth of the total, or would Shmuel disagree with that point with Rav? A mona is 25 shloim.
25.
Yeah. The Gemara is going to mention later there also existed a larger than average mana, so we'll get to that later.
Okay, how did you get shishim
for? So it's a good question where exactly these Amoroim are getting their various figures. I mean, one possibility is the different proportion talk about. Maybe these are amounts that were established by the Chachamim, maybe they are in that Torah, we just don't know where there's hints to them in the Pesukim. Whatever, each one had his opinion. Okay. But anyway, still, even Shmuel's opinion is still less than Rav Joseph and Hokinas is Shmuel's understanding of the Chachamim, because Rav Joseph and Hokinas have said you need 37.5 shloim out of each one of the five, which means total you need, which comes out total then to about 190 shloim. So if Shmuel's saying you need only 60, that can be called Kol Shehen compared to Rav Joseph and Hokinas. Okay. Rav Babachana Amar Rav Yechanan, Sheish Lakoyin, if even if you only have 6 shloim of wool, that is what the Chachamim call kol shehin, and lakoyin chamisha, in that case you will still have to give 5 shloim of it to the koyin. One tenth of shmul. The echad loy, and then you yourself will only be able to keep one sela's wool. So in other words, okay, so they're saying, what does the Chachamim mean by kol shehu? It means as long as your sheep in aggregate give only 6 selahs weight of wool, you're still, unlike Shmuel who says you give only 1 selah to the kohen, Rav Abalachana is saying you're going to have to give 5 shloim to the kohen, which is what the Mishnah said. So if the whole production was only 6 shloim, it means that 5 of it goes to the kohen and you're only keeping 1. Ula Omer Rav Elazar, Kol Shehen Shenu. Ula says in the name of Rav Elazar, never mind all of that, it says Kol Shehu. That means any amount, even if you only have 1 sela, that's it. You have to give that 1 sela's worth of wool to the kohen. Okay. So, now let's look at our Mishnah and see whether it fits with the different opinions. The Mishnah said, V'kama noisen loy, how much do you give the kohen? Mishka chomish sloim b'yehuda, shein esa sloim b'golo. You give him 5 sloim weight of wool in Yehuda, which equals 10 sloim in Galil, because their sloim were half the size of the ones in Yehuda. So b'shleim l'rav Rav Yerichan Micha. So according to Rav,
second verse on
Yehuda. No, yeah, I guess doing the second verse. Yeah. So b'shleim l'rav Rav Yechanan Micha. So according to Rav and Rav Yechanan, fine, I understand easily. Rav is saying that you need to have. Rav is saying that you have monocrop between all the five animals, and out of that monocrop, out of that 37.5, you're giving five to the kohen. According to Rav Yechanan, it also works because Rav Yechanan was saying that even if you only have six, you give five to the kohen. But our Mishnah seems to be a problem for Shmuel and for this seems to be a problem for Shmuel and for Rav Elazar, because Shmuel is saying that you only give one stella, and Rav Elazar is saying even if you only have a tiny amount, then that's what you give. Then that's what you give the kohen.
We're saying five and six are close enough.
No. We're saying that Shmuel is saying Rav Yechanan is saying even if it only produced six, you give five out of the six to the kohen. Fine, that fits with the Mishnah. But Shmuel is saying that as long as between the animals they produce 60, then you give one to the Kohen. But the Mishnah said you gave five. And Rabbi Lazar is saying that Kol Shehen means any amount. Even if they only have one seller, you give one seller to the Kohen. But the Mishnah said five. Yeah. So the question is, will the Taimeich or Rav Micha? So what, according to your Svara, does it work out according to Rav either? Well, Rav and Shmuel, the Amri Tavai Reish that gave the Shishim, Rav and Shmuel both say that the amount you're supposed to give for Reish that gave is supposed to be 1/60th of the, it's supposed to be 1/60th of the total, and according to Rav, it doesn't come out to that, because according to Rav, you have total 37.5, and you're giving 5 out of that, that's much more than 1/60th. So according to Rav, it doesn't seem to work out either. Yeah. The answer is, Ha'itmar Allah Jahi. Yeah, but you know that there was said in the Beis Medrash regarding that, Rav and Shmuel da'amu tavayu, that what Rav and Shmuel, both of them explain, what do we mean? What does our Mishnah mean? That when it says that you have to give at least five sloyim, it's not talking about when you have the minimum amount of wool. It's a different, it's a separate thing. When it comes to the minimum amount of wool, you don't necessarily have to give five. Then you could be giving less than that. According to Rav, you're giving maybe you're giving 1/60th of the 37.5. According to Shmuel, you're giving also 1/60th, which is 1 out of 60. What does the Mishnah mean when it says five? I mean, the Yisrael Sheyeshle Gizin Harvei Askinan. The Mishnah, when it mentions five sloyim, is talking about when you have a person who has many shearings. He has a huge amount of wool that he sheared from his sheep. Umavakash litna makayin. So now he wants to give them two koyinim. He doesn't just want to give all of that wool to one koyin. He wants to distribute it among many koyinim. Va'aminim lei. So we tell him kol chad v'chad loytiv tzalei mechamesh sloyim. Each koyin that you give from your reish nageiz, don't give him less than five sloyim. So you have 100 or 200 or whatever sloyim worth of wool to give. Make sure that when you're distributing it to the koyin, each one gets at least five sloyim. But the Mishnah is not necessarily addressing the case where a person has less. Where the Mishnah is not necessarily addressing a case where a person has less than 300, where therefore the amount he's giving, so therefore to give 1/60th is going to be less than five. The Mishnah is not talking about that. Fine. Gufa. Getting back to, we just said, Rav and Shmuel down, which have our Reish Lagez B'Shishim. Rav and Shmuel both say that Reish Lagez, you have to give at least 1/60th. Also, Truma B'Shishim. Truma, you have to give at least 1/60th. Peya B'Shishim, also Peya. So those three, you have to give, all of them, you have to give at least 1/60th. So the question is, Truma B'Shishim? What do you mean you give?
You have to give
1/60th of
what?
Of the crop, yeah. So the question is, what do you mean truma b'shishim? V'hanan chan truma ayin yafa echad ma'aboyim. We learn in the Mishnah in Trumas that a generous person gives 1/40th for truma. So how now it's true the Mishnah goes on to say that a stingy person gives 1/60th, but how are Rav and Shmuel mentioning Dafka the stingy person's shear? As if like that was a lachat chilafin. The answer is daraisa b'shishim. Midaraisa, all you have to do is give 1/60th. The Rabbanon said that you should be giving more. You should be giving ideally. No, we didn't say this before. No. So Rav and Shmuel are just informing us what is the minimum shiur. Daraisa is 1/60. It actually explains we learn it from Pasuk in Yechezkel. Anyway, the point is. No, but there. Well, the Gemara is going to go on to say that it's not necessarily so that Daraisa is 1/60. Anyway, the point is again it's a gilui milta b'avon. But anyway. Okay, so therefore, so what do you mean? Daraisa b'shishim. So what do you mean? Daraisa, you have to give 1/60th. Va'am Shmuel chita achas b'keres zakri. Shmuel says that midaraisa, all you have to do is give one grain of wheat. And one grain of wheat, and it passes the entire, and it passes the entire stack of grain. Because the pasuk just says you have to give reishis gancha, and it doesn't say an amount.
Therefore, one grain.
So one grain is enough, yeah. No, that's fine. But nevertheless, the point is you are able to do that. You're on your team. So okay. So the answer is the Gemara changes this answer. Daraisa kedishmul. Daraisa kedishmul. You're right. Midaraisa. It's like Shmuel says. All you have to do is give one grain of wheat. Dirabbanan bidaraisa echad ma'af achas ma'aboyim. What the Rabbanan said is when you're giving truma from something in which you chayev midaraisa, then you have to give. Then ideally you should give 1/40. Dirabbanan bidirabbanan b'shishin. Then you have when you're giving truma on something which in itself is only chayev and truma. Dirabbanan, for example, vegetables and according to Rashi also fruits. According to the Rambam, all fruits are chayev and truma and nicer. According to Rashi, only grain, grapes and olives are, and vegetables. Everybody agrees only the Rabbanan. According to the Rambam, all tree fruits are chayev and nicer and truma and nicer and
cherries and
all the shivas, and everything else. Yeah. According to Rashi, only dargam cheder shviyisa, only grain, grapes and olives. Everything else would only be the Rabbanan. And vegetables, everybody agrees only the Rabbanan, truma and nicer. So therefore, those kinds of things, since the requirement to give truma from those to begin with is only the Rabbanan anyway, therefore the Rabbanan said you only have to give 1/60. So that's what Rav and Shmuel meant when they said that truma b'shishim, they're talking about things that are not chayiv themselves, things that are not chayiv in truma daraisa, only the Rabbanan.
And daraisa would be
chayiv. If there are things that are chayiv in truma daraisa, then mid daraisa all you have to give is one grain of wheat, for example. Mid Rabbanan you should ideally give 1/40.
It's incredible. The
terror
is less
mocking
than the
Rabban. That's how it usually is, the Rabban, yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay, so that's
it.
And Yitzhar, yeah.
And Yitzhar is what?
Is grain. I mean, Dogon is grain. Tirosh is grape juice, the green grapes. And then wine, whatever. And Yitzhar is olive oil, so olives. Okay. Fine. Okay, so that takes care of Tirosh. What about Peya B'shishim? What do you mean Peya, you have to give 1/60? Well, it's not. You learn in the first mission of Peah. We say it every morning. The following things don't have a minimum of obligation. Ha-Peah, v'ha-Bikurim, v'ha-Oyin, the korban that you bring when you're oil the to be seen and to see and be seen by Hashem. You bring an oila. When you come in. Yeah, it can be any kind of animal, but you bring an animal as an oila. It's like, so to speak, when you visit a king, you bring him a gift. It's a respectful thing. It's a normal thing. It's a protocol that you bring a king a gift. So the same thing will have to when you're coming to Hashem, the King of Kings, you should be bringing a gift in order to be received in His presence, so to speak. So then there's a gift if you bring an oilas with you. So and those things, midaraisa, those things have no shear. The answer is exactly that. Daraisa ain't mashir. Midaraisa peya, and the other ones have no shir. Dirabbanan b'shishim. Midaraisa, they said you should be doing at least 1/60th with peya. So the question is, my kamash malon. Okay, but in that case, what are Rav and Shmuel? What's the chiddush? Tanena, we're learning in the Mishnah in peya. The next Mishnah says, ain person the peya mishishim. You don't do less than 1/60th with peya. Afafisha omru a peya ain mashir. Even though the Chachamim told us that peya doesn't have any minimum obligation. So therefore, so we see that what it means is that midaraisa, there's no minimum in the midrabbanan is 1/60. So what are Rav and Shmuel adding? The answer is hosam ba'aretz tacha b'chutz la'aretz. The Mishnah is talking about in Eretz Yisrael. Rav and Shmuel are informing us that also in chutz la'aretz, in the places in chutz la'aretz where you have a mitzvah of peya, then you also have the minimum is 1/60. There are places, there are countries relatively near Eretz Yisrael where midrabbanan, Syria, Bavel, Egypt, whatever, where to a certain extent. And Jordan is actually midaraisa, at least some parts of it, because they're right out to the territory
beyond
that. Yeah, would be in the same category. Yeah, it would be Babel or Aram or whatever. Yeah, so, okay, whatever. The point is that you have countries near as well, Amma and Moab, yeah, which are also parts of Jordan, yeah. So those, the mistress of those forests are binding to a certain extent to Rabbanon. So they were saying that also over there, you have to give at least 1/60.
How does it go then?
Not sure.
How does it go?
No, I'm not sure, actually. I don't know. Okay. Let's stop over here.